feel like they're carrying a backpack this morning? Anybody feeling tired from carrying a backpack? We're beginning a new series this weekend called Being Human. And we're looking at what does it mean for us to be human. I love that we're the only species that are concerned with how to be ourselves. Right? I can't really think of flamingos walking around saying, my knees aren't supposed to bend this way. How do I be a flamingo? Am I doing this right? Or a zebra. Am I black and white? Am I white and black? How do I be a zebra? And yet, we often wonder, what does it mean for me to be human? Am I doing this right? How do I be human? We know that we find ourselves in a world with a million different voices offering a million different perspectives and a million different options and ideas of what it looks like to be human, what it looks like to be successful, how to be our best self. And it's so easy to get distracted. It's so easy to listen to the wrong voices. And it's so easy to lose sight of what it actually means and looks like to be human. There's things in all of our lives. There's things in all of our backpacks that weigh us down, that make us tired. There's situations and circumstances that are so universal that are in all of our backpacks that at times we can think, well, that's just part of being human. Having fears, having hurts, having expectations unmet. These are all, that's being human. And while those things in our backpack are a part of the human experience, they're not the definition of being human. Which is why we're starting this series looking at exploring, well, what does it mean then to be human? And this weekend, to get our series started, we're going to look at the reality that sometimes in life we all feel stuck. We all feel tired and like we can't move forward. The reasons for that, well, there are many. It can be expectations. Maybe it's fears, rational or otherwise. Maybe it's hurts. Maybe it's unmet desires. Maybe it's unforgiveness. Maybe it's a choice that we made recently or decades ago. Or maybe it's a choice that somebody else made that really impacted us. The reasons that in life we can feel stuck, the reasons that our backpacks can be full, well, there are as many of those reasons as there are people in here this morning. But I believe that in the midst of all of us feeling stuck, that Jesus comes to us and he extends an invitation to us. And as he extends the invitation to us to meet with him, that we actually discover our humanity and we discover what it means to be human. So today we're going to look at John 5 and this story involving Jesus and a man who was stuck for 38 years. And as we look at this story, I think to us, the reality of what it means to be human will be revealed. So John chapter 5, the first 14 verses, we read this. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." Then Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, "It is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat." But he replied, "The man who made me well said to me, 'Pick up your mat and walk.'" So they asked him, "Who is this fellow who told you to pick it up and walk?" The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. It's an incredible story, and there's so much to dive into. Jesus makes three statements, and each of them have so much to share with us this morning. So let's make our way through it, starting with what we see in verse 5, where we read, "One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, 'Do you want to get well?'" So the invalid had essentially been stuck in place for 38 years, for 4 decades. We don't know the exact circumstances that led to this man being in his condition. And that's why I think this story is perfect for us. We don't know if it was a choice he made. We don't know if it was a freak accident. We don't know if it was medical. We have no idea why he was stuck, but we know that he was for almost 4 decades. And in the midst of that, after 38 years, Jesus comes to him and he asks, "Do you want to get well?" Let's put ourselves in the invalid's position. Try to imagine 38 years in the same spot. This man probably forgot what hope felt like. I'm certain he had given up of dreaming that things could be better, that things could be different for him. Did you notice that when Jesus asks him the question, "Do you want to get well?" that he doesn't even answer the question? He deflects. Rather than even allow the door of hope and possibility to be opened, he just kind of deflects the question away. And he starts with his sad story and he starts to give excuses. Jesus asks, "Do you want to get well?" And he says, "Well, I have no one to help me into the pool. I keep trying, but someone else gets down ahead of me." He doesn't even let the possibility of being better sink into his heart. Rather than address the question, he starts talking about how lonely he is. "I have no one to help me. I have no one around me." And I think it reveals to us the truth that without authentic community in our lives, we get stuck. Without people around us, we get stuck. You know, if I take my Bible and if I were to just put it right here, and not a single person was to enter this room or touch this stage for 100 years, that's going to be right there. Nobody to move it. Nobody to touch it. No reason for it to move. But that wouldn't even be there by the end of the day because there's so many people moving around. When we have people around us, when we're in community, it becomes a whole lot easier for us to move forward. It becomes easier to move, period. Without community, we're stuck. Like this man, some of us are feeling very much that we're stuck in life, perhaps due to community, perhaps due to people around us. Maybe we know why we're stuck, maybe we don't know why we're stuck. But like this man, we all have different coping mechanisms. This man in this story, his coping mechanism was clearly deflection, making excuses. He coped with his hopelessness by saying, "Well, you know, this is the reason why," and he made an excuse for it. We all have different coping mechanisms. Maybe it's bitterness. Just start to have a jaded perspective on the world, or perhaps insecurity or jealousy. Maybe we put up walls to protect ourselves or to hide behind. Or perhaps we cope by compensating, by working so hard, by caring about the externals, by getting things done to show everyone how productive we can be, knowing that behind the scenes we still feel like we're stuck in that moment from days, weeks, months, decades ago. We compensate by putting out this image that we get things done. But we all have coping mechanisms. Hope seems like a cruel reality, so it's just easier to resign ourselves and And we think, yeah, well, I guess everyone else gets the breaks. This is just my reality now. We make excuses. My parents, they just wouldn't understand. My kids, they wouldn't get it. My spouse will never change. We think that there's no way out of this financial nightmare. Perhaps I can't overcome this addiction. It's been so long. It's part of my family line. I can't do it. I guess this is just my lot in life. It's so easy for us to allow hopelessness to set in when we feel stuck in life. It's so easy to make excuses. I think we have the option. Will we remain stuck in life? Listen to the voices that rationalize away and justify us. Yeah, this is just us. Or will we respond to the invitation of Jesus when he asks, do you want to get well? You know, when you read through this for the first time, Jesus' question seems like such an obvious one to answer. Do you want to get well? Yeah, it's been 38 years. I'm ready to get well. But the more I think about this question, the more profound it becomes for me. Think with me the great cost of this man answering this question, yes. Do you want to get well? Saying yes would mean that potentially everything in his life would have to change. Everything would have to potentially change. For him to say yes, it was him allowing all kinds of opportunities to be open for him that were previously not possible. Him saying yes certainly would have had financial implications. Think about it. He wouldn't have been able to beg anymore. He'd have to find work. He wouldn't be entitled to the things that he once was. All of the conveniences in his life would change. It would have had relational implications as well. No doubt in 38 years, a lot of relationships fell to the wayside, and he probably thought, well, they haven't visited me, so forget them. I'm not going to go and try and make any effort. I'm just going to let those relationships die. Him saying yes to Jesus meant that there might have been some hard conversations to be had. His housing would have had to change. Perhaps his friends would have to, relationships would have to be developed. His eating habits would change. To experience all that Jesus had for him, he had to be willing to risk tremendously. Saying yes to Jesus was him saying, yes, and everything can change in my life. I'm just ready to no longer be stuck. And we see the truth that it takes such risk to be human. It takes so much courage to say yes to Jesus. We together declared a few moments ago, there's no mountain you won't climb up. There's no shadow you won't light up. There's no wall you won't kick down. There's no lie you won't tear down coming after me. And it's true. It's 100% true. But it's only true if we let it happen. It's only true if we say, yes, Jesus, you can shine a light into the shadows of my life. Yes, I will let you kick down these walls. Allowing Jesus to do this work in us means that we have to be so courageously vulnerable, willing to risk so many of the comfortable places that we just get used to. I think sometimes we're stuck in place because we're not willing to risk experiencing the freedom that Jesus offers us. We get comfortable with the convenient. And we'd rather live in the brokenness of familiarity than courageously step out into the unknown adventure of healing. We'd rather stay in the familiar. To experience being human in all of its fullness means that we must be open to all that God has for us. This man was given an invitation from Jesus to experience a whole new reality, a whole new opportunity to flourish in life. Next, we read that Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat, and walk." At once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. The invitation that Jesus gave this man was the one thing that he had not been able to do for 38 years. But Jesus extended to him a command that was meant to be obeyed by faith. Now, can you imagine being in the invalid's position? Imagine the courage and vulnerability that it would have taken for him to step out in faith in that moment. We're told that a great number of people were around this pool. So a great number of people that knew this guy potentially for 38 years. Jesus goes to him and says, get up. Imagine the courage for him in front of all of the people that knew him, for him to try and stretch out his legs. Imagine the vulnerability. Imagine the risk for him to even attempt what Jesus was inviting him to do. Extending limbs that hadn't worked for decades. That's risky. But then imagine the rush. Imagine the thrill that he must have experienced in that moment when he stretches out his legs that hadn't been used for decades and he's like, I'm standing. Probably feeble, probably shaky, but imagine experiencing something that he hadn't for decades. Imagine not being stuck anymore. Imagine the rush of movement. I believe that Jesus is inviting each of us to stretch out some limbs that perhaps haven't been used for a long time, that we may experience movement in our lives again. But it takes the risk of stretching out legs that we haven't tried for a long time. The invitation that Jesus gave this man was one that was meant to be acted upon. And the truth is as secure today as it has ever been. If Jesus is inviting you to do something, if Jesus is inviting you to step out on a limb, he is supporting that limb. He will never ask you to take a step out on a limb, out of your comfort zone, that he is not himself holding up. John 10 says to us that he leads us out, that he calls us by name. That means that wherever he's calling us to go, he's already there. Jesus will never invite us to go somewhere that he is not himself already in front of us. When he asks us to take a step of faith, he is always supporting, always holding, always ensuring and enabling us to move forward where he calls us to go. You know, when Jesus asks, do you want to get well, he responds by saying, well, I keep trying. And I just think Jesus says, like, yeah, that's the point. You keep trying. Allow me. I'll enable you. Just get up. Pick up your mat and walk. This limb, as scary as it may look for you to step out on this limb, don't worry. I'm holding it. Pick up your mat. Everything can change. You can move forward again. I love that Jesus invites this man to walk, and I also love that Jesus doesn't actually tell him where to walk to. Jesus just said, you're no longer stuck, friend. Get up and walk. Experience the full range of humanity. Be free. I wonder if too often when Jesus invites us to step out in faith, if we're waiting for the coordinates exactly where he wants us to go. You know, we're waiting for the direction step by step. We think, okay, Jesus, I know you're calling me to take this step, but I need to know the 50th step after, or the 100th step, or the 150th. What about next week? What about next month? What about next year? Where do you want me to walk to? And I think sometimes Jesus is saying, no, just trust me. Pick up your mat. And walk. He's inviting us to experience freedom and moving forward, but we get stuck thinking, well, I need the entire map before I take one step. God's word says that his word is a lamp for our feet. It's a step by step. Us needing next month, next year, 150 steps away, that's not faith. Jesus says, I'll give you one step at a time. So get up and walk. It's a bit of a spoiler alert, but in verse 14, we read that Jesus found the man. Jesus says, walk. I'm with you. I'm with you. Just get up and walk. Years ago, in my journal, reflecting on what God was calling me to do, there was a season of life where I felt like the limb he was calling me to walk out on was really scary. It was really intimidating for me. And I kept praying. I'm like, God, I just need clarity. I need clarity. What is it that you want me to do? And I realized I didn't actually need more clarity. I just need the courage to take the step that I already knew he was calling me to. I think so often when we're praying, God, give me clarity, give me clarity. Really what we need is just courage. So many of the pastoral conversations that I have with people are really just talking about the courage to take the step forward that they already know. Oh, what should I do? I'm like, do you know what Jesus is calling you to do? Yeah, but I need clarity. No, yes, we just need courage. We just need courage. Sometimes I've joked with people, if God can write the details of Leviticus down to such precision that he knows exactly how to tell us what we need to know, he can speak to us. We need courage far more often than we need clarity. We go back to the story. This man's healed. He's walking. It's an amazing moment for everyone involved. I mean, I can't imagine the celebration that would have been going on. There would have been people, no doubt, cheering. No doubt, people excited. No doubt, people celebrating with this guy. But then the Pharisees show up. The religious leaders show up on the scene. And, as usual, things take a turn for the worse. They show up and they start barking out demands and questions. But notice how they miss the point entirely. They didn't ask the man, hey, who healed you? What do they ask? Hey, who told you to pick up your mat? Don't you know it's the Sabbath? The religious folks in the scriptures get the harshest treatment. And for good reason. They always focus on the wrong things. These Pharisees weren't celebrating in any way the man's transformation. They were focused on the external actions. They were focused on what this guy was doing, rather than looking at the transformation and the humanity of this individual. And, you know, they say, don't you know that you're breaking the law? Well, actually, there is not one single law in the entirety of the Old Testament that says you cannot pick up your mat and walk. Now, the Pharisees, what they did is they made a law before the law so that people wouldn't break it, right? So it's kind of like, you know, if the speed limit's 100, well, the Pharisees came in and they said, new law, it's 80. That way there's no way we'll break it. So when this guy is picking up his mat, he broke their law. He broke their tradition. He wasn't breaking the law. They were celebrating, or they were focused on all of the wrong things rather than celebrating what God was doing in the life of this individual. They missed the point. And when it comes to discovering our humanity, of moving beyond what has held us down, sometimes it can be messy. Sometimes it can be uncomfortable. May we not be like the religious leaders that miss the mark entirely and focus on all of the wrong things. Let's be people that are looking for the fingerprints of God on the hearts of the people around us. You know, let's not judge other people's journey because their path looks different than ours. Imagine if our default position in every circumstance, in every situation was saying, I see God's fingerprints on your life. I see how he's at work with you. I want to celebrate that. I want to come alongside. Hey, I see you're standing on some pretty shaky legs. I remember when that was me. Here's some of the things that helped me along the way. Or perhaps, hey, my legs are feeling a little shaky in this area. Can you help me? And I love that in so many ways, this is the absolute heartbeat of this community. I just want to fan that into flame. Let's be looking for the fingerprints of God on each other, helping each other discover the beautiful, flourishing humanity that God's calling us to be. It's all too easy to focus on the wrong things. Let's focus how God is at work in our lives. There's one more statement that Jesus makes that's important to look at. It's right at the end of the passage. Like I said, Jesus goes on the search for this man. And upon finding him, we read in verse 14, later, Jesus found him at the temple and said to him, "See, you are well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you." The man went away and told Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. I was stunned in my preparation for this weekend at the word again. See, you are well again. It implies that this guy had not always been in that situation and in that circumstance. We don't know what caused the man to be in that place, but we know that that was not always his story. We know that at some point, this guy was able to experience movement, mobility, and freedom. Something happened in his life that caused him to be stuck. Spiritual, physical, emotional, but something happened that caused him to be stuck. And the heartbeat, the passion of Jesus is to make us all well again. We were never designed to be stuck in place. We were never designed to be weighed down by backpacks. We were designed to live a life of movement. In Genesis, we read that Adam and Eve walked with God in the cool of the evening in the garden. We were created to walk and move with God. And by sin, by our choices, by the brokenness of others, by the brokenness of this world, we all have an inclination towards hiding and towards being stuck. But as we celebrated last weekend, Jesus went through the Garden of Gethsemane to the cross in order to open the pathway back to the Garden of Paradise. Story of gardens. Jesus has opened up the pathway to experience paradise here and now. The passion of Jesus is to make us all well again. Make us well again. I was preaching this passage a little while ago to the senior high students here. And as I was preaching to them, I was floored by the statement that Jesus makes when he says, "Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you." And I want to be careful how I say this, but I also want to be really clear. The way we receive that statement, I think, reveals a lot about the nature of the relationship we have with God. Stop sinning or something worse may happen to you. If we hear that as a threat, may I suggest that that might reveal a default perspective somewhere deep within us that God is coming after us. If we think that Jesus is threatening this man or threatening us, like, stop sinning or something worse may happen, I think we kind of have that like Bruce Almighty mentality, smite me. Thinking that God's trying to come after us and threaten and condemn us. But if you hear that through the lens of God is love, and you picture Jesus, holes in his hands, holes in his feet, a cut in his side, love in his eyes looking at you saying, stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. See, God loves us so much. He's not threatening. He's not condemning. Out of a profound and deep personal love for you and for me, he's saying, stop sinning, or something worse may happen. See, when God convicts us of sin, it's not because of how bad we are. It's because of how loved we are. Conviction of sin is always an invitation to life. Conviction of sin is an invitation to freedom. Conviction of sin is an invitation towards new life and being human. And he invites us all, be well again. Notice the order in this passage. Jesus heals this man. Jesus enables him to stand, enables him to move forward. And then, and only then, does he go to him and say, friend, stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. Saying sin robs your humanity. Sin degrades the beauty of who you are and who you're created to be. Sin steals from your soul. Saying sin always has consequences, and it makes us numb to the things that truly matter in life. Sin paralyzes us. It complicates everything about our lives. And it terrifies me how easy it is to just normalize sin. How quickly we can become desensitized to it. How much we can tolerate it. And what the Bible calls winking at it. It's just the way the world is. Sin robs us of our humanity. Sometimes we have this FOMO, this fear of missing out, thinking, well, I'm not experiencing all that the world has. But really, sin only ever steals from us. Sin steals the joy of life from within us. Sin always takes more than it gives. So Jesus lovingly says, just stop. Stop. You don't have to do that anymore. And then Jesus says, to continue in sin is worse than 38 years of being a lonely, hopeless invalid. It's worse than everything that you've gone through. It destroys you from the inside out. Stop sinning. Experience life. Experience being human. There's one more thing that I want us to notice in this passage. I actually think it's the key to the passage. I think it's the key to the whole series of being human. It's something I'd missed for most of my life. It's the way that the man is identified in the passage. Watch in verses 5 through 7, we read this. One man who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I am trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. You see there that the man was identified and known as the invalid. It was the label that was upon him. Yet notice the subtle switch that happens immediately after Jesus met with him. In verse 9, right after the healing take place, we read this. At once, the man was cured. He picked up his mat and walked. It's really subtle, but it is profound. Before encountering Jesus, this man was known, labeled, and identified as the invalid. He has this conversation. He has this moment with Jesus. And immediately after this encounter with Jesus, he's known and identified and labeled as the man. And we see the truth that every time we encounter Jesus, we discover our humanity. Every time we meet Jesus, we discover our humanity. So often we have these labels on us. We put them on, or other people do, and maybe it's successful, or competent, or gifted. Maybe it's stuck, or broken, depressed, addict, lonely. We have all of these labels on us, but we see that an encounter with Jesus, it strips off these false labels, and it replaces it with the label, created in the image of God. Fully known, fully loved. Man, woman, loved. An encounter with Jesus always makes us more human. And we move from being stuck, weighed down by a backpack, to walking with Jesus. The old is gone. The new has come. Jesus restores our humanity. And I'm convinced that in the same way Jesus paid attention to the man, he's paying attention to each and every one of us. This guy was there for 38 years. He probably thought, people stopped looking at me. He probably thought, it's too late for me. Nobody cares. There's a whole lot of people around the pool. Who cares about me? I've been here the longest. Don't worry about me. Go to someone younger with more runway. And yet, Jesus lasered in and focused on him. And church, Jesus sees you here this morning. Amidst the throng of people, I believe that Jesus has lasered in his focus on you. God, the one who created this universe, sees you. And today I want you to know that. And I want you to feel in your bones that the God of the universe sees you, and he comes with an invitation saying, do you want to get well? Jesus knew this guy's story. He knew that this guy wasn't always in that situation. He knew everything about him, and he also knew the potential ahead of him. And church, Jesus knows your story, and he isn't running away. He's coming to you saying, I've got an invitation for you. There's no mountain I haven't climbed up. There's no shadow I won't light up. There's no wall I won't kick down. There's no lie I won't tear down. Do you want to get well? What Easter is all about. He said, I came out of my grave, and today, April 28th, it's time for you to come out of yours. Do you want to get well? I believe Jesus has an invitation for every one of us, and that he's going to intervene in our midst. He sees you, he knows, he hears, and he cares. Do you want to get well? Here at FAC, we have an amazing ministry called Celebrate Recovery. It's a ministry that is solely about helping people overcome hurts, habits, hang-ups, everything from codependency to different kinds of addictions, to different kinds of brokenness and abuse. And it's all about helping us listen to the voice of Jesus saying, do you want to get well? Pick up your mat and walk. It's an amazing ministry. So many of our family have gone through it. And this weekend, we want to have us have an opportunity to respond to the invitation of Jesus. And we have some of our courageous friends from Celebrate Recovery that are going to be a living testimony to the difference Jesus makes. We've got one bag up here right now. We're going to move to a time of response and Celebrate Recovery, a few of our friends from that, they're going to be a living testimony to what it means as they've gone through this ministry, to drop their bags off up front to say to all of us what God has done for me, what God did for this invalid, God still does today. So the band, they're going to play a song. The Celebrate Recovery folks, they're going to come drop their bags off. And while we celebrate the fingerprints on their lives, what God is doing, I also want all of us to be listening to the invitation that Jesus extends to you and to you and to you and to me, saying, do you want to get well? So let's watch at how God has helped some from our community experience being human, how Jesus has restored their humanity. But let's also be listening to the invitation that God has for us this morning, saying, do you want to get well?